You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Oh, gosh, Nick. Go Padres.
Go Padres.
That's all the enthusiasm I can muster right now. It's bleak.
Well, we also got a special friend, Dallas McLaughlin, here.
Special friend? Special friend. What does special friend mean?
Listen, well, you're not always in the studio. Okay, so but I'm not a special friend. Fun.
You just go do other. You go do other podcasts. You give it up cheap all over town.
Oh yeah, I did do a Make the Padres Great Again. Yeah, if you hadn't listened to that, you could skip it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, skip it.
But you promoted us the whole time. So
of course we did. Yeah, that's my job.
Right. Well, guys, we got a very special guest.
And by the way, hold on. If you're calling me a special friend of the podcast, I might as well call you a special friend of the website.
Yeah.
Touché.
Yeah, someone's actually been writing on that thing. It's me and Ghost.
Yeah, well, and Geekster now.
Geekster. Oh, yeah,
amazing.
Geekster's great.
She's,
yeah. Yeah, friend of the website,
so
Nick McCann.
Fun to have her.
All right, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I got her hooked up with it, so. we're going to talk to my wife, Elizabeth Malloy, Elizabeth McCann.
Oh, wow. You guys are
the artist formerly known as Elizabeth Malloy.
Yes.
Hey, Faith Nation.
Hey.
Oh, Pink Hat. What's up?
This is the part of the podcast where you pat us on the head and tell us we're a nice little National League, right?
Well, you should explain.
Yeah,
That Liz is.
So my wife Liz is. Is a Red Sox fan, and the Red Sox are coming to town this weekend.
Yes.
Sure are. Lock up your husbands.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Hey.
Oh, I
don't know what that means.
No, it's okay. I've heard a lot of rumors about Rafael Devers.
Yeah.
So, I think this is going to be the all-time Padres season ticket GitHub transfer all time.
I actually reached out to my connect at the Padres about getting some tickets to this weekend. And he literally replied and said, for the Red Sox? No.
Yeah.
Yeah, Liz, it's a big deal, you know, for all the Red Sox fans that live here. I mean, you're not really
a lot of us.
You're not alone here when you move out.
I am not. It is definitely a little Boston West in San Diego. Yeah,
there should be some clarification too. Your wife is from Boston, or from where are you from, Liz? Situate?
Yes, I grew up in a little town called Situate.
The most Irish town in America, correct?
According to the U.S. Census, yes, the Irish Riviera,
official,
that's what we're known as.
So yeah, so you're not just like a San Diego Boston fan. You are a legit.
I'm not. I'm not just a person who picked Boston. I did grow up there.
It picked you
for a little while. They did pick me. I was born into it, as my T-shirt says.
Born into winning.
Well, I mean, not for a long time, but.
Since we've been.
I was born into a grand tradition of losing, actually, but they. Turned it around when I was in my early 20s, which was lovely.
Thank you, PEDs, huh?
Yeah, I have no memory except for what's happened recently. It's how I survive as a Padres fan. So to me, all year, the Boston area has just been winning ridiculous amounts recently. So
the last decade
plus has been very good.
Very nice.
We are raising our son in that tradition where he's
he is a winner.
He's a loser.
Are you raising him to be a Padres fan or a Red Sox fan?
Liz, do you want to take that one?
Well, I am a firm believer in rooting for your hometown team, so I am fine with raising him to be a Padres fan. However, my family buys him a lot of Boston sports gear, and Nick's family has not quite kept up. And he has a little Red Sox hat, and he has a Padres hat, and he prefers his Red Sox hat. He actually hates wearing his Padres hat.
Shots fired.
Yeah, well, it's got to be like a nice outlet.
Oh. Travis, we can edit that out. Post, but
yes.
I'm just
going
to
noted.
Put that
noted.
Out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could get away with letting him be a Patriots fan because we don't have a football team.
Yeah,
or a basketball team, or a hockey
team.
Right. There's a lot to.
Nick and I made that arrangement because. Was he born yet before the Chargers left? I can't remember, but he was either on his way or had already been born. And I asked if the Chargers leave, can we raise him a Patriots fan? And Nick said sure. So, yeah. So,
some would say his birth brought about the move.
Yeah.
It could have. It was in the air.
Yeah, they'll probably sneeze out another Super Bowl this year. Who knows?
I do want to ask, like, how old were you when the Red Sox started to win?
What year was that?
2004 is when they won there.
22.
So how did, like, this is a real question, because I think this is a question that's facing a lot of Padres fans. If everything shakes out like it's supposed to, you know, like if we're supposed to have this team that starts winning and is a competitor, like, how did your life change going from a lovable loser to this juggernaut of baseball?
Yeah, I maintain, and this could be crazy, that the city of Boston became just a slightly friendlier place after 2004. Now, that's not very hard to do. We're not known as a friendly place.
No.
But, you know, I definitely felt a spring in everyone's step, at least for a little while. Now, I moved out here to San Diego in 2005, so the year after they won. I do go back a fair amount, but... I suppose it's made me a slightly more optimistic person, you know. I think that occasionally things could turn out well.
So it's just like your Red Sox fandom is, I was going to say.
You know? two years ago, the Boston Celtics were in the Eastern Conference Finals, and she did not know that was happening.
Wow.
She was like, oh, they're in that? That's great. That's really great.
To be fair, I'm not the world's biggest basketball fan.
I know, but
I try to follow the Celtics, but of all the sports, that's the one I follow the least.
After what they did to Isaiah Thomas, who wants to follow?
Yeah.
You know what? I did like Isaiah. I was mad.
So, Liz, a big question that's been going around, it started basically after the game, that I've noticed, is that, like, Boston's going to be representing at the stadium at Petco Park this weekend. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's going to be overpowering boos towards Manny Machado because of the history?
I don't think so, but I could be wrong. I don't think Boston fans... This is going to sound really bad. I don't think they spend a lot of time thinking about Manny Machado.
Well, you know, we don't spend a lot of time thinking about whoever your left fielder is, all right?
No, we just think about...
I know there was all that stuff when he was with the Dodgers, but I think he's with the Padres now, so I don't see that happening. But again, I could be quite wrong.
Yeah, there was nothing when he was in Baltimore, even though they played a lot, was there? It was just a recent playoff.
There's some beef. No, there's some beef.
Not that I remember. No, I don't. I mean, yeah, they obviously play Baltimore a lot. I don't remember there being anything.
There's
like
some bad blood.
Crazy.
There was some throwing at
was
Manny.
There?
Yeah,
but
there's
I'm
stuff.
I'm sure there's like a bunch of Red Sox fans listening right now screaming at me about some incidents I'm forgetting. But I don't remember it being that bad. But
see, you're so casual now. You don't even care.
If you guys were.
It's what winning feels like.
Sorry,
you don't need to care anymore.
Hold on 1 second. I have to attend to my little Padres fan. Hold on.
Oh, that's so great.
That's very smart, Liz. That's very smart.
Isn't that so nice?
Sorry, guys. Important news. He threw something on the floor.
Okay.
Was it his Padres hat?
Fire Andy Green, he says.
It's one of those things, like, if you guys were coming to Fenway, they might boo him, but I don't think at Petco, I don't think they will. But again, I could be wrong. The boo birds could be out, and I'm gonna be totally wrong.
So you're saying that Boston fans are classier than Dodger fans, right? Is that an easy answer?
Yeah, but come on.
That's a close one.
I'm not trying to rain on Boston or anything, but that they kind of seem like they're.
I'm
competing for, you know, that little.
I would say a Boston.
Just like we don't give anything, we're gonna boo.
I would say
we're just gonna boo.
The Red Sox fan is a little bit more sophisticated as a baseball savant than the Dodger fan.
We'll see. We'll see on the fly balls, right?
But however, they are both insufferable to be around.
Yeah. That was my point. Yes.
Yeah. Boston fans are more insufferable in an authentic way. Dodgers fans are playing the part of an insufferable
right.
fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Boston knows what it feels like to win recently. Yes.
So, yeah. Their agent says this is good for them. But So, yeah, I mean, I think what will probably happen is we'll pick one of your aging stars and give him a surfboard, and that'll disarm all the crowds. So
Sounds good. I'm sure Dustin Pedroia would love a surfboard.
Yeah. Is he here? Oh, that's great. Is he coming?
Gosh. Actually, you know, that's actually a good question. I heard he was rejoining the team, but I'm not positive if he is coming on this trip or not. That's a good question. It's also really sad to me that he is an aging star because I remember his rookie year. And yeah, he's younger than I am, but he's probably nearing retirement, which is kind of crazy. But that has nothing to do with anything.
Well, you guys are coming off a World Series championship, and it sounds like this year you guys, it's basically you're throwing in the towels. They shut down Sale,
yeah,
and it's, it just didn't happen.
Bit of a hangover year from the World Series championship, unfortunately. Aww. Yeah.
Aww. That's so rough on you.
Know,
regular season baseball, just stopping at the end like that?
Yeah, that must be new. When's the last? I mean,
we're only a few games above 500, if you can believe it.
What's that?
We saw a glimpse of it early in the season, but it's so far away, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Oh. My podcast. You're up.
Sorry, guys. I'm trying to.
Now, let me ask you this. If Adrian Gonzalez shows up this weekend, what fan base boos harder?
Right?
Boston or San Diego?
He just says, God just wanted me to get
booed. I feel like Boston, just because in general we're an angrier people. But, he's one that neither of us like, huh?
El Titan. Big Chargers fan.
You know what I was thinking about recently, Dallas, and I don't know if you remember this. At Nick and I's wedding in 2011, you and my dad both gave speeches that made jokes where my dad thanked everyone from San Diego for Adrian Gonzalez, and then you sarcastically thanked us for Anthony Rizzo. And I was thinking about how poorly both of those speeches have aged.
You know what? That was a moment.
That really captured August of 2011.
Wow. What a time. What a time to be alive. First off, I do want to preface it by saying that, one, your wedding, your Nick's wedding was a delight, and I've never had more alcohol before the reception than I have at your.
And happy 8th anniversary, right?
Eighth anniversary.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. It was last week.
But I remember writing a joke that centered around Adrian Gonzalez for that speech. And then, because of the order of things.
Well, it was still stinging so bad.
Yeah, and your dad went up before me. And he opened with that joke. And I remember hitting the table really hard in anger that my joke got taken from me. And so on the fly, I came up with a Rizzo joke that didn't really land because nobody knew what Rizzo was going to be yet. And then obviously it panned out. And you're right. Now we both look like morons.
The good news is we haven't recovered.
Yeah. Which is great. Hey, come on, Hosmer.
Yeah.
Man, I'm not going to get into that again. Everybody seems to think that Hosmer is the worst first baseman in baseball, if you guys didn't know that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Liz, we're going to go down there on Saturday night. Or,
Guys are going this weekend?
Yeah, we're going. We have to.
Oh, yeah, we're going
just
to
one
Saturday
game? Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I have a question as a season ticket holder. What should I put my tickets up for? Section 110 towards the front, third base side. What would a Boston fan be willing to pay for these tickets?
$3,000.
We got a wicked pair of seats here.
Can I do like a 25% bump? Is 30 too much?
I think so, although I'm not sure the games are sold out.
No, but these tickets I have, if I put them at face value, they go in like an hour or two. So I'm thinking about trying out my little StubHub.
Like 30% bump and see what happens.
All right.
Yeah.
I might do that.
Ooh.
I might do that.
All right. Well,
donate the rest of the podcast, guys. We'll get it back.
Well, thanks for coming on, Liz.
Oh, anytime.
I'll see you later.
Yeah. Yeah, you will. Our
right.
Open, so take it.
Yeah, I might have to sleep on your couch, maybe.
Your couch? Wow, she bought the couch. My gosh.
So Liz, also before you go, you have a concert tomorrow night. Tonight, if you're listening to this on Thursday,
I get to plug things.
Plug
don't
it,
I?
Plug Ooh. It away.
I am. I'm in a band. We're called the Fictitious Dishes, and we're playing the Merrow in Hillcrest on Thursday night. So I guess this releases Thursday. So tonight, August 22nd.
Yeah. Hey, Liz, remember that one time we were both on the same show at the same time, at the same place, and Nick didn't come? Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, that was a good night.
Me too.
I'm still hearing about it. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Well,
all right, guys.
I'll see you later.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank
you. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. So
bye.
Fun.
All right. Well, thanks for talking to my wife, guys. That was
couples
nice.
Therapy, bro. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
I think we're gonna grow from that. But let's talk about we should talk about the big story that kind of sealed the season for us.
Fernando Myers. Oh wait, what? Oh, yeah.
Fernando Tatis Jr. is down. He's out. They're gonna put him down for the rest of the year. It sounds like a stress reaction.
Reaction. I've never heard that before in my entire life. But if he needs to rest, that's a good enough reason as any.
What does it feel like to have the most exciting player probably of our lifetimes come through the Padres system, just be gone like that?
I would say second, because Damian Jackson was pretty exciting.
He was.
Yeah.
On his best
day. Lots of promise.
And I know somebody's yelling at the podcast going, he was in the Tigers organization or something, but it's fine. Here's the deal. Here's the reason why it bothers me the most, guys. The most. Is because now he can't win Rookie of the Year.
Yes.
And he was, and it would have been so sweet to have one of our guys get Rookie of the Year. Like, it just would have been such a sweet moment. It would have been a moment of relevancy for the franchise, a moment, how cool of a moment for him, his dad, like his fan, like, you know what I mean? Like, just what an incredible moment we could have had as a fan base, as a franchise. And now it's taken from us, and it's going to go to Pete Alonso, who I can't get that upset about because he's my first baseman in fantasy.
And he's doing damage.
And he's doing great. But, I mean, it still bothers me that – because the arguments – it is interesting. Being someone who's not very into analytics, advanced metrics and all that stuff, which, again, we don't need to get into it. But
the
argument
is great again. Yeah. Available on iTunes, there you go. Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify.
But the argument against it is, like, Pete Alonso is the exact argument for not advanced metrics. You know what I mean? Because he just hits home runs. He strikes out a ton. He's hitting like 260 right now. Only recently has he started to get like doubles, really. Like, it is interesting that the Mets fans are all in and he needs to be Rookie of the Year, but there's so many parts of his game that are not great. And Fernando Tatis is like, not only is he just a great player, he's also kind of the advanced metrics superstar as well. Like, everything about his game is great. There are some numbers that are lacking, but that's what you're going to see in a young player's game. You know what I mean? It's not like he's going to. Exactly. So it is. It's just a juxtaposition, but at the same time, like, it's just that it's heartbreaking almost that he won't get that chance. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And when I get an alert that the game was starting, like, I would make. If he was playing, I would tune in immediately. He was exciting. Like, I wanted to see him. And I was like, oh, the game's starting. I'll make sure I get to it. But it wasn't like, I got to get on it right now. He's going to be leading off the game. He might be hitting a home run. Like, it's just a lot different now that he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, him leading off was just, it was like the tip of our spear. It was just like, this is how we set the tone. He was hitting a bunch of leadoff home runs.
Yeah, it was insane.
Like, what, 23 home runs? One of the best shortstop seasons for anyone, and he's 20, you know,
and missed a month early.
I described him to my mom by saying it's like having young A-Rod, but they use him like Ricky Henderson. And she kind of got that. She kind of nodded, even though she didn't get it. But sure. I think that's kind of like what they were doing with him. You know, he's so fast. I don't think we've had this level of athlete on the team.
Well, I think
decades.
That's also where you're going to have to start really thinking about how you want to use him in the future, because he did get hurt twice significantly, two injuries. He's been banged up a few times already, two throughout the season. And so I think moving forward, you're really going to have to figure out, how do we want to use the guy? Like, can we use him as a Ricky Henderson, A-Rod hybrid, or do we choose one to go with that? Because I think if you push him too hard, he could really end up hurting himself. You know what I mean? And he'll want to do it because his drive and his passion for the game is obvious.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is a huge question with the whole team right now. It kind of comes down to fundamentals and learning how to play a whole season. And everyone's like harping on Manny for not hustling, but he's kind of playing maturely and how you last the whole season. Even though we have these fundamental issues that lead to injuries, I think maybe it's just me, but we've been like sliding past second base on, steals or line drives to the gap that we shouldn't be taking second on. I just feel like we've been playing really sloppy, uncoached baseball, and I wonder if that has any leads to any of these kind of injuries. And playing that way, I'm not saying that we should put restraints on hustle, but at the same time, like, just playing reckless, and I don't know, it has led to
Tatis has had some very awkward slides this year.
So yes,
very
dangerous. Yeah. I mean, he's the way he plays is very dangerous, and yes, I hopefully this is the learning moment where he just, he wasn't doing anything reckless at the plate really, but I mean, his bat is so valuable that like he has to play more like Manny, where it's everything's calculated. He knows exactly, he plays within himself, and I hope we see that next year. We saw this with, remember Bryce, like early Bryce, when he was just running into walls and stuff.
And like, everybody was like, he's got to pull it back. Or
I think a lot of guys go through this, these super athletes who just, they're 20, they're invincible, you know, and they feel invincible, and then they have to learn the hard way.
I mean, right, think about when you were 20, the stupid shit you were doing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And how good it felt.
And how good it felt until all of a sudden, oh my God, I can't move the next morning.
Yeah, I was on vacation last weekend and went wakeboarding, and my muscle memory just allows me to pop up and act like I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I wiped out and fell on Saturday, and we're recording this on Wednesday, and I'm in like so much pain. It's unbelievable.
I remember when I was doing the Sea Lion show at SeaWorld, I did it in my 20s. And then I came back to it. I retired at like 28, and I came back at like 33, and I did it for another couple of years. I remember that first week back from shows when I was 33. I'm not kidding around. I went home, and I laid on the floor, and my wife touched my back, and I cried.
Yeah,
I cried. Like, you can't, like, you're invincible in your 20s, but it's like, what is it worth? You know what I mean? Like, we weren't going to win this season. We weren't going to compete. So I almost see that when Manny doesn't hustle is going like, hey, it's not like his hustle to first base is going to get us to the playoffs like this season. You know, got to take things into perspective a little bit. Yep. I would almost like to see them meet in the middle, Tatis and Manny, as far as hustling goes for next year, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Manny's going to play, what, 160 games this year? I mean, he didn't play today.
But, I mean, yeah. It's been very few.
These bats who are so valuable, like, they have to play a more... I mean, you want Jankowski to be running through walls. Like, you want him to be going all out.
Just sent back down.
He's gone.
Did
just
he really?
Just sent back down, yeah.
Okay.
Just
Whoops.
Sent back down.
The
it's okay. It doesn't matter.
The ghost of Jankowski
running
really
the
walls.
Matter. I'm sure somebody came up and he'll be great.
Tatis and Manny will be standing next to each other at opening day, wearing brown uniforms next
that's
spring.
That's going to be so sweet. I can't
that's one. That that's was one we, good timing thing. They knew the season was not looking bright, and they threw us that bone at least.
I literally told somebody I was at the I did that Vanilla Ice show, you know?
Yeah.
And at like we were hanging out in the back, and somebody I forget their name. I'm sorry, but he was in the band that I was singing with, and his girlfriend was there, and she was talking about the Padres, and she was talking about they wear brown uniforms, right? And I was like, no, they don't. She's like, what? Why not? And I'm like, even a person who's a casual observer doesn't understand. It was beautiful. So I'm so excited. I couldn't be more excited for the uniforms.
And it feels like the Friar is going to be a prominent, the original, good, clean, crisp Friar.
I want it. Want it.
So one last thing we should talk about is the quotes that Austin Hedges had last week.
Oh,
let's
your
get
boy.
Into it. Now, forget about the analytics.
Boy.
My boy. Well,
slow
down.
Hot boy summer.
Can I? For me, it was, I need to not be so hard on myself. And like, I should really look at life a little bit more delusional than I do. Like,
oh, yeah.
Right? Like, if he can honestly say that and not know how everyone else is like viewing him on the field and what it looks like when he swings the bat, Yeah, I mean, I feel like I should be comparing myself to Einstein, and like I could solve the world's problems if someone would just listen. You know, if someone would just listen to what I'm saying, the whole world would be at peace. It's kind of like his quote, I'm valuable enough to play every day and I don't understand why. Well, you're not very good at hitting a baseball, which is half of the game.
I mean, I watched the last half of the game yesterday, and I, you know, and then they talk about, oh, Hedges 0 for 4 tonight. And I'm like, yep, that sounds about right. Like, he's just not, he's not a good all-around baseball player. Yeah. He's a very good, you know what? He's a good defensive replacement. And the thing that kind of sucks is we talked about this at the beginning of the season with Mejia and Hedges is they weren't giving Mejia at-bats. They were giving all the at-bats to Hedges. And Mejia is clearly the better baseball player out of the two. There's just, at this point, I don't even know why anyone would question that.
Instinctually, especially hitting.
He is, as far as offense goes, he is lights out a better player than Austin Hedges. Defensively, he has a lot to learn. But the thing is like, if you're not giving him time behind the plate, if you're not letting him work, then how is he going to learn it? So that's one thing. Two things is that they screwed themselves with this whole thing, because unless they want to keep Hedges around as a like defensive replacement for games, which they kind of not really have been doing, then you can't do anything with them. No one's going to want them. Like, that's the thing is, as Padre fans, there's people out there who defend Hedges and love Hedges. A very clear indicator to you should be that if we were to let him go, like DFA him tomorrow, nobody would pick him up. I mean, maybe somebody as a defensive replacement, but that's it. Nobody's picking him up as their starting catcher. Yeah.
Why wouldn't we keep him as a backup that plays every eighth, ninth?
No, we could, but that's what I mean. Like,
I think that's a perfect spot for him.
If they didn't play him as much as they did in the beginning of the year, they could have traded him first month of the year and got something pretty sweet back. They could have done it. And they didn't, because they didn't believe in Mejia for whatever reason. And they kept Hedges around to try to establish themselves. And I think all of us pretty much knew what Hedges was. They could have, but people out there still loved him. They could have gotten something back for him, and now they can't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Mejia's having one of the best months. He's one of the best hitters in baseball this month.
And, at least,
you know,
the National League, yeah.
I think the best, if this season is just going to be, let's see what guys can do, I think you just have to give him the majority of starts.
And they seem to be doing that.
They have, yeah.
They even started
it's
him
like,
in left field. When
he deserves the same chances that Austin got at the plate, you know, as a hitter, that he deserves that defensively. He deserves to be able to, like, you know, they just had a save with Kirby Yates, who he just, you know, a couple times before they were arguing with each other. On Sunday, it worked out. They worked through it. He's having communication issues with people, but he seems to be working through it, and he seems to be a nice guy. They like him.
Yeah, like it was the Sunday game? When was that
Sunday game
with
Kirby?
Yates almost
really
nervous.
It got real crazy, but he worked through it.
It felt like, they had taken the next step in the relationship.
And that's the thing, though, to me, that doesn't really make a lot of sense, because even Marver put out a tweet that actually Yates has better stats with Mejia than he does with Hedges. But the thing about it is, yes, the pitchers seem to be vocally more comfortable with Hedges.
Well, and Yates' body language is just all over the place.
But part of that is also that they've pitched to Hedges more. They've worked with Hedges a lot more than they have Mejia. And separately, away from that, their success isn't great with Hedges. Like, they are not showing me, like, what are they showing you that they absolutely need to have Hedges? Whose career year are we having besides Yates that you can't switch catchers? I mean, if Lauer and Strom and whoever else are coming on,
Casey's been great.
I need a pitch to Hedges only. Well, then bye. Like, you can. Who do we have that we can't just
send
away?
You're not that elite. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Paddock, of course, but at the same time, he's having a rough up and down year. No one really knows what's going on with Paddock. He has a lot to grow on, and you're not a stud enough to demand your own
catcher.
Well,
he's going to have to go to the back of offseason and figure out what this relentless thing means. Honestly, and I don't mean that flippantly. Like you've been in the majors now. You are getting hit.
Yeah, well,
you got to go back and figure it out.
He's somewhere around. He's over his what his normal pitch count is, obviously, by a lot as far as innings go. He has a lot to learn. He has a lot to learn.
Do you want
to
play a stupid game?
Yes. Sure.
Right now,
always.
Right now, who would you say would want, based on everything that's happened this year, who do you want starting opening day, starting pitcher?
Quantrill.
Clayton Richard.
Yeah, I think Quantrill might. I mean,
he's
right
our
now,
most intelligent Maddox style like pitcher already.
Quantrill's
most
good.
Mature.
People like Quantrill, and he's like your number three, I think.
And I'm not worried about him like blowing out his arm or doing. He's like,
he's a good pitcher.
He's a very good pitcher.
He's a lot better than
throwing.
Anything. I remember people were really excited when we drafted him, and that excitement kind of faded because he wasn't really killing it in the minors. But he's consistent. And I think he's been consistent. He had a few weird starts in the majors, but the last couple of starts he's had have been really nice.
And then my number two would be Lucchesi. Honestly, if we had what we have now, he has been more than serviceable. He's been, you know, and I think he could only get better next year. He has a little bit more to go. There's more of a ceiling.
If it comes down to a decision between Lauer and Lucchesi, I think they're leaning towards Lucchesi, right?
Yeah.
I think ultimately, honestly, Lauer is a long relief guy. Yeah,
I'd like to see that.
Or a five.
He's a five, but I mean, like, we have so many pitching prospects.
It doesn't feel like a hole they need to find. Like, you know what I mean? You don't need to go sign a $3 million 5 year. Yeah.
I mean, I think if we could get a Cole or a Strasburg, you get a Cole or a Strasburg.
Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure to do that.
I think that like at the end of the day,
oh gosh,
I honestly wouldn't be excited to go into next season with this rotation. I would not be excited for that. I would like to see one very dominant starting pitcher in a rotation next year, whether that's Cole or Strasburg or some guy or Patino. Mm-hmm. Patino. He just murders it in this year, and they bring him up in through spring training. Something. I just want some guy who's going to be lights out next year. We need one guy.
We don't have a center of our rotation.
No, we don't. We don't have an ace.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go ahead and call Emily Walden from The Athletic. She's a prospect writer, and she's one of the best prospect writers in the country, I think. But she's a Tigers reporter, so we can talk about that. Yeah. So let's call Emily.
I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home. Last night I went to sleep in Detroit City.
Hey, we're on the line with Emily Walden from the Athletic. What's going on, Emily?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. We're Padres fans, and the Padres have basically given up this year. So how are the Tigers doing?
You know, that's a topic I'm currently trying to avoid at the moment. So no, I kid. They're very much feeling the growing pains of this rebuild. No question about it. They've had a lot of injuries throughout the farm system, which has kind of trickled down from the major league club. And everybody's just kind of, I think, hitting their limit. This year has been long for the major league club. It's been long for all the affiliates. So we'll see how everybody gets things wrapped up. But definitely it's a trying time to be a Tigers fan, no question.
What phase are they in? Is it, would they say it's the second year of the rebuild or third year? Is that...
Yeah, it's kind of up in the air. I guess it just depends on your it depends on your definition. The biggest question is, when did it actually start? Right. That's kind of one of the argued time frames when you talk about the phases of the rebuild. For me, I felt like it kind of started back in 2017 when they started to shed some of those bigger contracts. So like Justin Verlander, obviously, JD Martinez, Ian Kinsler, Justin Upton, all of those big contracts that they were carrying, that was the year that they did the big pushes and got the returns from the Cubs, from the Astros, from the Diamondbacks, from the Angels. Got a lot of guys back in for those. And then it sort of started into last year, which were like, all right, we're officially in the rebuild, like the actual full season of the rebuild. So I guess however you calculate that time frame, it kind of seems how that's how it's played out so far.
Yeah. Has the term tank been thrown around? That was what we called in San Diego. Our 2016 to 18 was the tank.
The tank years.
Yeah.
One of my favorite hashtags that I was sent from a Tigers fan follower was hashtag embrace the tank.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
That's really what it's been, because as I'm sure you guys know too, the worse you have, the better chance you have at a top draft pick. And ever since Detroit got Casey Mize, everybody's going, ooh, give us another one. Give us another Riley Green. Give us another, you know, young buck who can come up and do something. But it's so tough for this fan base to have to wait for all of these, this younger wave of players who some of them are still 2 or 3 years out. So it's going to take some time before we really start to see some of the fruits of everything.
How is the inner, we went through this for years and, you know, a big topic of conversation on this podcast and other podcasts where, you know, how's the interplay with the team and the fan base going? Are they out front saying to the fan base, like, this is our plan. We're going to be bad for a couple of years and stick with us, have faith in us.
There's definitely a lot of please don't leave us.
Okay. I mean, are they outward about it? Because there was a lot of tricky language with the Padres when that was happening. They never really wanted to say tank.
Yeah, I think that's with any team, honestly. I think there's going to be that certain level of diplomatic political responses of, yes, guys, we understand it's going to be a little bit bumpy for a while, but just bear with us. We have a plan. We have a vision. I think every team really tries to take that approach. I don't know of any teams who would come right out and say, guys, we suck. We're sorry. You know, they're not going to come right out and be that blatant, would be my guess. But I know I've spoken with a few Tigers executives who have said, you know, just bear with us. Bear with us. We're putting these pieces together. But in the fans' eyes, when you had a drought for as long as they have, you've got to show quicker fruits. And I think that's the biggest frustrating point for them, which Padres fans can definitely relate to that too, where you want to get guys like the Manny Machados to say, look, this is us showing we're trending in this direction. You've got to kind of throw a bone, so to speak, to the fan base to say, look, we're having a hard time right now, but here's something to get you excited.
Yeah. Well, I mean, are you noticing with just your writing, I mean, you focus a lot on the prospects. I mean, is that fan base really digging into the minor leagues more than usual? Obviously that happened with us a lot.
Yeah, we got way, way deeper into the minor leagues than we ever imagined we would.
That's really where it's at right now. And it's the part where I'm getting tested is talking about injuries and talking about, you know, guys getting shut down. We've had a couple guys within the farm system. Casey Mize, you know, one of the biggest arms, was officially shut down by the Tigers today. So that's a big blow for AA Erie, who is currently pushing for their first postseason appearance in ages. And he was one of the key arms in that pitching rotation in the Eastern League. So that was a blow to that team. Bo Burrows, who was throwing with AAA Toledo, he's been shut down, had an oblique strain. They have 6 Class A pitchers who are on the injured list right now. There are guys just getting beat up and battered. And I think it's a sign of this season for the whole organization. It's been tough, really, really tough from top to bottom. And the fans, unfortunately, have had to kind of be pulled along with it. We're hoping for some brighter days in 2020, but we'll have to kind of buckle down and see.
Yeah, we went through it on the major league level with Fernando Tatis Jr. Did you happen to see him at all in AA or through your travels at all?
I saw him when he was still at the lower level.
Okay.
So that was kind of when he was sort of coming into his own a little bit before he was the super prospect that everyone came to know. And I mean, you could see it from day one. You know, the chance of getting to see a lot of these guys at the lower levels. I saw a lot of Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. In the Midwest League when they were assigned to Class A Lansing. And you see these guys at the beginning, which I love, because you can see a guy like Guerrero or Bichette or Tatis, or, you know, even some of these other ones, that you look at him and you go, that kid is different. You just kind of get this hunch. Some of them, as we all know, players develop differently and they develop at their own pace. But guys like Tatis, guys like, you know, Francisco Mejia, guys like Taylor Trammell, all these guys who are sort of coming into their own, they all have that one little thing that you look at him and go, he's got something.
Yeah. It factor, yeah.
Do you notice anything with these? We're seeing it a lot all over sports, but, like, you know, these second generation players where their parents are, you know, in the same profession that they're entering into. Do you see a difference in their personality, like a common denominator when you talk to them?
They're a lot more poised.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you look at a guy like Matt Manning, for example, with the Tigers organization, his dad played in the NBA. You know, totally different sport, but he grew up around that spotlight. He grew up watching those interactions. I talked with Griffin Conine, Jeff Conine's son, Class A Lansing. No fear at all. He's not shy, has no no hesitation. He speaks very confidently. I spoke with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. through a translator when he was in the Fall League last year. Doesn't even bat an eye. He goes, oh, somebody wants to interview me? Hello, how are you? He's very gracious. Guys like Bo Bichette, who, you know, obviously his dad was a major leaguer. Daz Cameron, his dad was a major leaguer. Kevin Biggio. It's like the whole wave of second-gen guys. And you do notice a little difference with them because they've watched and they've seen, you know, the effects that the media can have, both positive and negative, depending on how you play your card. So it's a good heads up for them, and I think they're getting a good head start on everything.
I have this fantasy where all the players from, like, the 80s and stuff, they go on this cruise and all the kids, you know, played together. So they've all actually grown up around this together, and they're just – this is just what they do. You know what I mean? They go on to play Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Well, so you went to a Tin Caps series basically this weekend. What jumped out at you from that? Do you see anybody that jumped out?
I will say this. This is my, if I'm remembering my math correctly, I think this is the second year that I've done a bit of Tin Caps coverage. And I will say this, and I've said it before, this fan base is just prospects on prospects on prospects. And I know a lot of people get to see more kind of at the Lake Elsinore level or, you know, some of the higher up levels. But watching these guys come through, you're seeing guys who the Padres, I mean, they're notorious for going after extremely young players. And they're not afraid to promote them. Chris Kemp, the international scouting director for San Diego, he has such an eye to be able to see future talent. He was telling me about Luis Patino when he first saw him. He was at a random showcase in Colombia, didn't even have a plan to see this kid. Walks up, throwing 86 to 89 on his fastball, skinny kid. Chris told me he said he was maybe a buck 50 soaking wet. And so just a very skinny, underdeveloped kid. And now you've got one of the top arms in the farm system throwing triple digits and a well-proportioned filled out body. And so having a guy like Chris Kemp and his international team, that I think is what's setting the organization apart. Because when you can go out there and you can spot these young, really just exceptional talent kids, that's going to do something big for your organization. And I think we're seeing that with San Diego right now.
Yeah.
Well, that's so exciting to hear. I love it.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the players I saw on your Twitter feed that you noticed was Blake Hunt. Was he jumped out at you at all, or is that
he did? And it's so funny. I was laughing with one of the scouts I was sitting with because I'd forgotten he's still only 20 years old, so he's still very very young. He's about 6'4", and I may have nicknamed him Paul Bunyan because he is a mountain of a man. And something that really, I put this out on Twitter, something that's always impressed me about him is he's continuously working. He does all of his early work before the game up until 10-15 minutes before the game starts. He's off on the side with a coach or a trainer working on blocking, working on framing, working on his pickoff throws. Just he works nonstop, and I think that's the sign of a really coachable kid. Yeah. And then there's a couple of really, really good, good projectable bats. Augustine Ruiz is obviously one. Justin Lopez, he's another one who's come through really well. Obviously, Tuca Pietermarcano, he's been developing really well too. And the cool thing I think about that is the staff has made it their mission to really work individually with these guys. You know, they're looking at different skill sets, different body types, different projectability, and you've got to approach it differently. And so I give them very, very big props, especially John Matthews. He's in his second year with the Tin Caps being their hitting coach, and he's got great relationships with the guys, and I know they all trust his direction.
I mean, can you feel like an overall Padres philosophy when it comes to development on all the levels? I mean, we always heard about like the Dodgers way. Is there a Padres way that's emerging?
I think every team has a way, but it's just a matter of if they're making it public or not.
Yeah, okay.
But with San Diego, I think for them, I think there was a little bit of a fearlessness that trickles down from AJ Preller. Mm-hmm. And this is just kind of a personal opinion from how I've watched different groups from within the organization. I got to go out to spring training in Peoria for the first time this year and check out their complex. And it's almost kind of like a, we can do this. We can figure this out. It's not necessarily cocky. It's just more confident. And mm-hmm. I think it's an organization that's very sure of itself. I think they've got good guys in place for good, you know, good production as far as getting the right players into place. And I'm a fan of AJ Preller. I'll be very upfront about that. I'm a fan of how he wheels and deals, and he's extremely creative. He's very aggressive when it comes to seeing what he wants. And I think for the position that the Padres are in right now, I do think he's the right man for the job, because I think he's not going to be afraid to sort of push in that extra mile to say, look, I care about this organization. I've made this my life, and I want to see it produce. So I think he's definitely a good guy to have at the helm.
Yeah. So, I mean, some other players that I guess you saw this weekend, Mason Fox and Ripken Reyes. What did you see? What did you see with them?
Yeah, and I kind of lucked out, because that series, the first day I got there, I did a Saturday-Sunday series, and Ripken and one other guy, you're going to have to forgive me for blanking on his name, but they had promoted two guys. Ripken was one of them. And he was interesting to me. He's a little bit smaller. I want to say he's about 5'10". So in comparison to some of the other guys that are, you know, 6'3", 6'4", he runs a little bit more compact, but really, really good hand-eye coordination. Very good hand-eye coordination. He's very aggressive in the box. Doesn't chase, though. It's like a good mix of waiting for the right pitch and just going after it when he sees the pitch he wants. And defensively, wasn't flashy, but he was consistent. And again, it was just two looks that I got at him. I obviously like to get a couple more to give a good balanced opinion, but he looked very comfortable. He didn't look confused. He didn't look lost. He's just like, hey, you know, I'm out here to do my job. But I think the hit tool was really what impressed me about him. He isn't exceedingly old, you know, for the league, and it's, I think, a good place for him. It was a good challenge. Then Mason Fox was very interesting to me, because I had heard a little bit about him through another scout who I spoke with, and he walked right out there and just absolutely dominated. And I'm sitting there going, "Who? Wait, what?" So he put out just two innings, only threw two innings, faced six hitters, and struck all of them out.
Wow.
And it was very low key. Very low key dominance. It wasn't this huge triple digit fastball. I want to say he sat about 91 to 94 on his fastball. So a good low to mid 90s fastball. Slider was sharp. He has a really, really nice slider. It's still a little bit inconsistent. He had a couple pitches where I could tell it wasn't quite where he wanted to put it, but it was still fairly effective. And the history of him being a two-way player, I think that kind of adds to his versatility a little bit. And he knows his body really, really well. So just got promoted to Lake Elsinore, I believe, this week.
He just got moved up.
He's coming along really well. And I think he's still 22, so relatively young. And we'll see how he progresses as he keeps moving up the ladder.
So he was a college pitcher, correct?
Correct. Yep. He was a college pitcher. I forget what infield position he played, but as a sophomore, he only pitched like eight innings his sophomore year. And then they bumped him up to about 40 plus innings junior year. And I was looking over his numbers. He actually hit 300 plus in addition to pitching the 40 plus innings. So that tells you right there, he's extremely athletic. Very athletic to be able to balance both of those roles.
So you're saying we could have Brandon Frazier from the Scout? You know, maybe.
No.
I'm not going to quote you. You just blink twice. No.
You know, he's definitely, I'll quote the Padres executive who I spoke to. He's definitely intriguing. Intriguing. I think that was a good word choice for him, because you're not putting too heavy of a label on him. You obviously don't want to build false expectations. but there's intrigue there. And I know just getting to see one of his outings, I went, okay, this could be somebody right here. But obviously you got to see how he pushes at the next levels up, and we'll see how productive he can be from there.
So at the trade deadline, the Padres made a big trade involving the Indians and the Reds. What's your take on Bubba? Oh man, I almost said Bubba Trammell. What do you think about Trammell? He could be our center fielder of the future if Margot doesn't work out. What's your opinion on him?
You know, I honestly felt for Padres fans that night because having to say goodbye to Whitney Houston's biggest fan in the loss of Framber Reyes, that was tough. I personally have watched so many clips of him singing in the most entertaining off-key tone of voice that I think I've ever heard, and he did it with so much joy.
Yes.
That was the best thing, where he goes, you know what, I don't care that I can't carry a tune. I'm still going to have fun.
we hurt for a couple days. That was...
That was tough. I think, you know, in the time that the Padres fan base has sort of welcomed me into their lives, that may have been the lowest point that I've personally witnessed. there was a lot of very sad tweets coming my way. But the thing with Taylor is honestly one of my favorite guys that I've been able to watch over the last couple of years. And I'm a big proponent for guys who they're able to have good makeup on and off the field. Taylor is somebody who is going to win the fans over, both for his ability to play and also his interaction with people. He's an absolutely genuine guy, loves what he gets to do. He's extremely humble. We used to joke around about the fact that his last name, Trammell, is actually spelled the same as Alan Trammell.
Right.
But it's a different pronunciation. Mm-hmm. And I asked him one time, I said, have you ever played around with that? And he said, yeah. He goes, I used to tell people that Alan was my uncle. And he said, I enjoyed the expressions from people where they looked at me like, he goes, so I would have a little bit of fun with that. But that's who Taylor is. He's just got such a good personality, really, really positive. And he really, the only concern that I had is he really struggled at the plate this year. And that's uncharacteristic for him. He's generally somebody who makes really good contact, obviously still developing as a hitter. But I talked to a couple of scouts that said, you know, he's still got time. He's still young. He's not getting close to being over the hill yet. So to play at the level he's played at, and I think I want to say he's put out, what, 2 home runs for the Poodles, if I remember correctly.
He had a few big ones.
Yeah, so I think he's kind of showing off what could be for next year, but I think this offseason is really going to be good for him to sort of mentally reset, you know, get back into a good place mentally and be able to move forward into next year. And it'll be his first year with a new organization, so I think it's going to be a good start for him.
Yeah. So as the minor league season winds down and, you know, the Tigers aren't going to be in the postseason this year, what are your plans over the next month or so, writing wise?
Well, I've got a lot of kind of wrap up pieces that I'm working on right now. I have a couple of features I'm doing. I'm going to do a focus on some of the best tools in the Tigers minor league system. So I'll highlight some guys with that. I'm actually working on a 10 caps year in review.
Oh,
very
that'll
cool.
be something that people can look forward to. I spoke with a few of the coaches just to get their input and figure out what guys stood out in the first half, what guys stood out in the second half, you know, talk about a few that were maybe a surprise and, you know, just sort of paint the picture that way. And I'll still find ways to keep writing throughout the off season. I'm hoping to do a focus on some of the international teams. So like in the Dominican, Mexico, Puerto Rico, and then Australia obviously has the league as well. So that'll be something that I'll have my focus on and be out in the fall league in October. So we'll see who the Padres send out that way. And hopefully I can get some updates on those guys.
Cool. Maybe in 3 or 4 years, Casey Mize and Mackenzie Gore will be facing off in game one of the rematch of the 84 World Series.
But,
you know, I think that'd be fun for everybody. So we'll see which organization reaches that point first. Because I think Still got a little work ahead for both of them, no question.
Well, according to Manny, the Padres are going to win the World Series before the Dodgers, so we do have that going for us. But
and that another man who has no shortage of confidence, Manny Machado.
So I had one last question. A couple of weeks ago, you tweeted something that caught my eye. You tweeted, "Hey, Padres fans, using a GIF, how are you feeling about the season so far?" Now, was that you trying to see what Padres Twitter would come up with? And has Padres Twitter become a thing nationally to that degree?
You know, it's funny because I remember the first time I sort of got adopted in to Padres Twitter. Right. I think it started with my Luis Patino coverage last year.
Right.
Where a lot of them went, "Come join us. Be our friend." So a lot of that was, you know, somebody's writing about our boys. Let's, you know, check and see what she's up to. And it's been a fun fan base to work with. Obviously, a fan base who is very similar to the Tigers in regards to a drought, you know, and not being able to see much production to the degree that they'd like to see. But being able to put together little things like that actually started with the Tigers fan base. Yeah. It was about, I think, maybe past the All-Star break, I did one of those posts, and I think we've got like 300 or 400 responses on that thing, because I joked around. I said, it's cheaper than therapy, you know, yes. So throw a GIF on there, you know, throw an emoji, throw whatever you want to do. And I like to check in with Padres Twitter every once in a while and say, hey, you know, how y'all doing? And it's interesting to see how fan bases just approach things in their own way. And I figure as long as I occasionally tweet about Luis Patino, Mackenzie Gore, that y'all will keep me around and I'll keep putting out content for everybody.
Great. Well, we hope you keep doing it. You can follow Emily at Emily C. Walden on Twitter, and she's all over The Athletic, and look for that Sod Poodles piece that's coming out. That'll be great. So thanks for coming on, Emily.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Thanks.
Let's go, Padres.
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego Podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, The Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Aaron at voiceofsandiego.org. That's ERIN@VOSD.org.